Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
This is DW's Africa Link program, live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And my name is Jane Nyinge. Glad you could join us.
Coming up on the program, Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari addresses the nation after his return from London, where he's been receiving medical treatment and vowed to end the insurgency in the country.
Terrorists and criminals must be fought and destroyed relentlessly.
Fresh deadly clashes hit several parts of the Central African Republic amid growing fears over spreading violence in the deeply troubled country.
We're looking at probably the worst levels of fighting that we've seen in the CAR since early 2014. Things have gotten much, much worse, in particular in the east and the southeast of the country.
Well, these are some of the stories that we've lined up for you, including your responses to the stories that we've been posting on our Facebook page. But before all that, here's a roundup of what's been making headlines around the world.
This is Abubakar Jallo with the DW News. We begin with some breaking news. Spanish police say they have shot a man who was wearing possible explosives belt in a town outside Barcelona. It was not clear if the man was Yunes Abu Yaqub, the 22-year-old fugitive that Spain has been searching for in a massive manhunt. Spanish officers said the Moroccan man was the person who drove a van into crowds of pedestrians on Barcelona's Las Ramblas tourist promenade on Thursday. The U.S. Navy has ordered a worldwide operation pause after one of its guided missile destroyer, the USS John S. McCain, collided with an oil tanker in the Singapore waters. Vessels from several nations are still searching for 10 missing U.S. sailors after this morning's collision. French police have launched an operation in the southern port city of Marseille after a car crashed into two bus stops, killing one woman. Another was left seriously injured. The first crash occurred in the city's 13th district, the second about an hour later in the 11th district. This eyewitness described how the first car rammed into people.
We heard a loud noise like a car accident, and we came to figure out what happened. At that moment, we saw the window of the bus shelter with the person laying stationary with blood on her and the van leaving very quickly, moving fast, squeezing the tires.
This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. North Korea has denounced a joint military drill between South Korea and the United States amid heightened tension over the North's nuclear and missiles program. North Korea's KCNA news agency said this is aimed to ignite a nuclear war on the Korean peninsula at any cost. Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari has said he will stop separatist activists that are spreading unrest in the country. Buhari made the statement days after returning from a three-month medical leave. Looking thin but sounding stronger than his last broadcast in June, the Nigerian president said he had been troubled by social media posts calling for splits in the country.
Nigeria's unity is settled and not negotiable. We shall not allow irresponsible elements to start trouble, and when things get bad, they run away and settle others with the responsibility of bringing back order, if necessary, with their blood.
And for some light news, in London, the Big Ben bell's final bong has rung out from the UK's Parliament clock tower. The cherished symbol will be silent for most of the next 4 years while the tower is renovated. A crowd of more than 1,000 people gathered to ensure Big Ben went out with a bong, the hammer that has struck the massive bell every hour for most of the past 157 years will take a break until 2021. For more news, visit our website at dw.com. I am Abubakar Jallo.
Welcome once again to the program. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Jane Nyinge.
We begin today's program in Nigeria, where President Muhammadu Buhari took to state TV in his first speech since returning from a long medical absence in Britain in a bid to dampen mounting separatist tensions in the country. The now 74-year-old Buhari, who received treatment for an undisclosed condition in London, vowed to redouble the fight against Boko Haram jihadists. In spite of the president's return to Nigeria, his health condition remains a major major issue in the country. In Nigeria, where people speak about everything openly, many have even called for his resignation. Sam Olukoya reports from Lagos.
Many Nigerians expected President Muhammadu Buhari to talk about his health situation that has kept him out of the country, but he rather focuses on his determination to tackle security problems.
Terrorists and criminals must be fought and destroyed relentlessly so that the majority of us can live in peace and safety.
In a country like Nigeria, where people talk about everything freely, regardless of the subject, some ordinary Nigerians like Solomon Okodua are disappointed that the president's broadcast failed to mention his health condition.
But as a leader, as a number one citizen, he should be able to tell his subjects the kind of headache, the kind of malaria, the kind of fever he went to treat in UK that we cannot treat in Nigeria. So that shows that he as a president doesn't have a confidence in Nigeria's health sector.
Asamota Kingsley of Network of Civil Society of Nigeria says concealing what ordinarily should be public knowledge from the people shows the lack of regard the country's ruling class have for Nigerians.
So it's just unfortunate that the leadership of this country, they are taking their people for ride. You know, it's not a do or die affair. If you are not fit enough to govern the people, you resign so that at least a capable hand can come in.
Many share Kingsley's opinion that President Buhari is keeping his health status private because he may want to stay in office. It should be recalled that during his first medical trip to London this year, the president spent 50 days away from home. He traveled back to London just 2 months after returning to Nigeria. Nigerians will be keenly watching whether he will make a third medical trip abroad this year. If that happens, the calls for his resignation will surely heighten.
Sam Olukoya reporting from Lagos, and we have some comments on that story.
Yeah, Isaac, this is a topic that has kept people talking on social media platforms. And when I look on our Facebook page, Kwasi Gamba from Ghana says, "Welcome, President Buhari, but I think it's time you resign from office. You broke your own protocol by going to another country to get treatment despite the ban you placed on your ministers."
Interesting there. Christopher Muflam in the US says, "Mr. Buhari obviously loves his country and believes more disclosures about the cause of his illness does not help much to address Nigeria's challenges."
Our usual one, Isaac Godwin from Liberia, says, "I'm in high spirits to see that President Muhammadu Buhari has fully gained the momentum we used to know. Now it's time for him to bring down the jihadist groups, recover our economy from recession."
And Nwafo Charles Newi from Nigeria says, "What a relief for us in Nigeria. Personally, I always pray for the good health of Buhari because I'm a Christian. Our president has performed very well, especially in the agriculture sector. My prayer is that he will finish his time in office, that nothing will happen to him. In Jesus' name, amen." Anyway, we shall keep on reading those comments whenever we can from our Facebook page, DW Africa. Just go there and drop it, and we always read it whenever we can.
Absolutely. Moving on, the last remaining suspect in last week's Barcelona attacks has been arrested or killed. A Europe-wide manhunt to 22-year-old Yunis Abu Yaqub had been underway with roadblocks in place in northeastern Spain. Police feared he may have escaped the country. They believed he was the driver of the van that rammed into crowds on Barcelona's main boulevard. DW correspondent in central Barcelona, Charlotte Chalsom, tells us more about this latest development.
Police have tweeted that there is an ongoing operation, so we know that there is something happening. Media reports are split as to what exactly is going on. Some Spanish media here is saying that he has been arrested. Another source is saying that he was shot down wearing an explosive belt. This is thought to have happened in a town west of Barcelona. This is all happening as we speak, so we can't firm up, unfortunately, exactly what is going on. We do know, though, that there has been an enormous manhunt underway for the man who drove his van through this street just here, killing 13 people. Earlier, police put out an appeal to ask the public to try and help trace him. They offered a description and they warned that he was potentially armed and dangerous. So I'm sure we'll know more in the coming minutes exactly what it is that's taken place here.
And his identity, of course, coming to light as the investigation really heats up and gets underway. We're also getting some more insight, Charlotte, into the events of the days around the attack. Fill us in there.
Yeah, we've had a lot of information from police this afternoon, particularly about how it was that the driver, US Abu Yaqub, was able to escape this street. What we've heard is that after getting out of the van, he put on dark sunglasses and very chillingly was able to just walk away from the scene of the attack, from the devastation that he had caused. He's thought to have walked to a very popular market just in that direction for around 90 minutes he was wandering around. It's thought that he was trying to look for a car that he could hijack. That is indeed what he did. He found a man who was trying to park. He hijacked the car. He drove for about 10 kilometers. At some point in that journey, he is believed to have stabbed that man, the owner of the vehicle, to death. He then tried to storm a police checkpoint. He was fired on by police. He managed to escape by running over a police officer, and then the car was abandoned some 3 kilometers away from the scene of that. And very tragically, the owner of the car was found dead later. It's not known then where the attacker escaped to, but he is thought to have fled on foot.
That was Charlotte Chelsom in central Barcelona speaking to DW's Sarah Kelly.
To the Central African Republic now, where fresh deadly clashes hit several areas of the country this week as international alarm grows over spreading violence in the deeply troubled country. The clashes involved a majority Muslim rebel group and a predominantly Christian militia called the Anti-Balaka. Since the start of the year, more than 800 civilians have been killed. Before we came on air, I spoke to Leo Smudge, a researcher from Human Rights Watch, and he starts by telling us the current situation in the country. Take a listen.
We're looking at probably the worst levels of fighting that we've seen in the CAR since early 2014. As you may remember, in late 2013, early 2014, the Central African Republic was really on the world's agenda for a short period. And then things did calm down for a couple years. But now, things have gotten much, much worse, in particular in the east and the southeast of the country. There's a few reasons why. Number one is that the Seleka armed group was sort of kicked out of Bangui, the capital, in 2014 by African Union and French forces, and they reconstituted bases in the center and east of the country from where they committed serious human rights abuses. And the Anti-Balaka militias followed them to that area and continue to target civilians as well.
The crisis in the Central African Republic seems to be forgotten, presumably because the world is more focused on issues happening elsewhere. How best can MINUSCA work together with the government to avert a situation that might turn out more deadly than we thought, since nobody seems to be caring about what is happening on the ground?
Yeah, I mean, this has been the fate of the Central African Republic for years now, even before this current crisis. I think it's more a question of getting international partners, countries like the United States, countries like France, which has, you know, the former colonial power, which certainly has a lot of interests and knows a lot about the Central African Republic. It's getting those types of countries, EU countries, and other African countries to acknowledge that the situation, despite the elections in 2016, the situation is at the moment very, very precarious. We are looking at levels of violence that we thought we had moved away from in 2015, 2016. We have to highlight that this is in a very bad neighborhood when you look at the neighbors of the Central African Republic. You've got South Sudan to its east. You've got Sudan to the northeast. It's under Chad. It's above the DRC. So this is an area that we certainly don't want to see turned into a failed state for purely geopolitical reasons.
Leo Smudge from Human Rights Watch. And now Buhari has been lashing out at social media on how it has been reporting the situation in the country.
Yeah, and I'll start with Adeyanju Deji. Says President Buhari says social media is his headache. Well, Mr. President, I have more bad news for you. Social media is going to do more.
Issa Mohammed says that was a subtle warning because they know their lies will be punctured through social media. That speech will reinvigorate us to hold government accountable. Anyway, keep those comments flowing, and where you have to write them is go to our Facebook page, DW Africa, comment, and we'll always read them whenever we can live here on air. And just in case you've just tuned in, you're listening to DW's Africa Link program, live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Jean Nyinge.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, tuberculosis cases on the rise in Ghana.
I started getting sick, so I started feeling cold. My body getting hot, sweat at night, so I was also losing weight.
We also have a roundup of results from the Bundesliga weekend matches, and we will be joined by one of the DW's sports editor to tell us more on what transpired.
That's right indeed, Jen. But before all that, first Uganda, which is stepping up plans to build nuclear energy plants to curb power shortages in the country. Currently, Uganda is using power generated from hydro and thermal plants to run both the industries and for domestic use. Our correspondent Alex Gita in Kampala reports that access to electricity is still low, more especially in rural areas, while urban dwellers are complaining about the tariffs.
This is a small-scale grain milling factory downtown in Kampala. Like in many parts of the country, factories like this one are a common sight and a source of employment for many Ugandans, especially the youth. The main challenge for such small-scale factories is lack of sufficient electricity to run the machines. And with the rampant load shedding of electricity in the country, it also means it will take many years before they can move up the scale of fully-fledged industries. I spoke to some of the workers at this grain milling factory on what they think about nuclear electricity being introduced in the country.
I'm Nicholas Kato. I run the groundnut miller, and I have been doing this for the last 4 years. Our biggest problem here are the high electricity tariffs, and we use a lot of power in one day. So about nuclear, we shall be happy to use it if it is applicable to our machines, but they might charge us the same amount of money. That will not be helpful. I do not know much about nuclear, but I have heard about it in the news and in countries like Iran.
My name is Mukwaya Andrew. I think nuclear energy will help us a lot more, especially if it is dependable and cheap. I've heard a lot about nuclear energy, but I thought it was only to deal with weapons. But all the same, we are ready to try it out.
Such challenges only prove that there is shortage in generation, but also distribution of power. Uganda is expected to produce at least 2,000 kilowatts of nuclear energy. Priska Bonabantu is the undersecretary at the Ministry of Energy, charged with seeing this project through.
The generation potential from local renewable sources using the existing technologies will not be able to meet future energy needs. Therefore, in an effort towards achieving reliable supply of electricity for industrialization and poverty eradication, my country will continue to develop all available energy resources, including nuclear power, following the International Atomic Energy Agency guidance.
Harold Achema, a former diplomat and now social commentator, says Uganda should concentrate on the other sources because the chances of nuclear accidents happening are high.
We can't afford it. It's very expensive. Secondly, we've not exhausted the other alternatives. We have got plenty of resources for hydroelectricity. We have got abundant sunshine for solar. We can use biogas. We don't need nuclear energy, for goodness sake. And what Ugandans want are better healthcare, quality education, and then more investment in agriculture. These are the three sectors which affect the lives of ordinary Ugandans.
That report was compiled by Alex Gitter in Kampala. Jen, I can see you are reading yourself to read some comments. Yeah,
absolutely. There are so many comments on that particular topic. And I'll start with Hogi from Cameroon. And he says, wow, I'm excited as if I'm a Ugandan. If there is no election around the corner, then it will be a good initiative. What's your take, Isaac, on that?
I mean, it's an ambitious plan, I may think so, because just like you heard that commentator, that analyst in the report, he says there are better ways, there are many alternatives, you know, to go fast before the country can think of going nuclear energy. Didas from Rwanda says electricity plays an important role in the development of the country. Maybe this project will change a lot, especially in rural areas.
Derek Tower in Berlin asks, nuclear energy, are there not better alternatives to clean energy that will provide both vertical and horizontal jobs enrichment?
And Lamine Fofana Gabla in Montreal, Quebec, Canada says, Ugandans, you people planning to build nuclear energy? It's good if you would reach first international standards.
Let me read this one from Ramadan from Ghana. Says, I think the electricity crisis is not only in Uganda, but Ghana, despite all the efforts that the ministers are putting, we still having a problem with the electricity.
And one ironical one from Alhaj Kamara says, it's a smoke dream that will fire after we are no more. We'll be back right after this.
Health check. Health officials in Ghana are worried about the high number of TB cases being reported at health centers across the country. This has led to several interventions, including creating awareness and encouraging people to come out and test for the disease. Widening access to testing and treatment are taking place in poor communities where little ventilation and pollution is high. Isaac Kalechi visited one community like that in Ghana and reports.
I am at Buduburam in central Ghana, a village that was and still remains home to thousands of Liberian refugees, although a number of them have been repatriated back to Liberia from the refugee camp. Not far from here, some have remained after they intermarried with locals. The village is now in the spotlight, not because of refugees, but the high number of tuberculosis cases.
So I went to the fire hospital and psycho. The Muslim hospital there. Yeah.
That's 23-year-old Alex Morgan, who was diagnosed with the TB a year ago after several wrong diagnoses that nearly cost his life.
I started getting sick, so I started feeling cold, my body getting hot, sweat at night, so I was also losing weight. I was going through a lot. I cannot eat, pain in my chest, no rest.
At one of the health centers here in Buduburam, I met Samuel Kujau, a TB specialist at Kolebu Teaching Hospital. He operates a health facility in this village due to high TB cases here. He attended to Alex at the most critical stages of his sickness.
And when they came, the moment they entered and I saw him, because it's my work, I know that no, this is TB.
Samuel's father suffered from TB while growing up and infected him and his four siblings. His sister succumbed to death. Samuel has lived with the pain and wants to make a difference. Samuel explains why the disease is prevalent in an area like this one.
It's an airborne disease. So if five people are sleeping in a room that has no window or has that only one window, by the time you detect one person having TB, he has already infected the others. Being able to eat well, doing your miniature job, if you are working at the quarry, you are working at the dump here, you are working at the dusty environment, all these things can weaken your lungs.
According to the Ghana Health Service, 286 out of 100,000 people in Ghana get TB annually. The prevalence rate, according to health officials, is thus surging and worrying for many experts who recently came to Accra for the Africa Union Region on Tuberculosis and Lung Health Stakeholder Conference. Paola Fujiwara is the scientific director of the International Union Against Tuberculosis and Lung Disease. She says the TB bacteria is gradually becoming resistant to drugs, which is a worrying development.
We need TB drugs, multiple drugs. Because when you treat tuberculosis, you need many drugs. The worst thing you can do in treating TB is to give one drug. Because you give that one drug, it kills some of the germs, but other germs are living. So you have to have another germ that attacks it from a different angle. But we are running out of drugs.
A project has now been launched in remote villages in Ghana to help TB patients. Samuel Kujawu says awareness creation is key to encouraging people to test for the disease and also eliminating stigma.
Isaac Kalechi reporting from Ghana.
And it's that time of the week when we talk about sports. To delve into that is Davis Obdop, DW Sports Editor, and we're going to listen to what transpired during the matches, the Bundesliga matches at the weekend.
Well, we saw a big upset in the game of the week, which was Schalke against Leipzig. Schalke won 2-0. This was a team last year that was basically a mid-table team, and Leipzig was the big surprise, of course, and everybody's wanting to know how they are going to do in their second season. I'd say another one, actually, is the way that Dortmund played. Dortmund played really, really well without arguably one of their best players in Ousmane Dembele. They've had some transfer trouble there. He wants to go to Barcelona. He wasn't there, but they still looked really good, with Christian Pulisic, a homegrown player for them, playing extremely well in the absence of Dembele.
Yeah, talking about the Leipzig match, it must have been a huge disappointment for Leipzig and, of course, a boost for Schalke's new manager, coach Domenico Tedesco, isn't it?
Yeah, Tedesco obviously managing his first Bundesliga game, and the way that Schalke looked was impressive. I mean, last year under their previous coach, which got fired, they looked very sluggish, but you could see that Tedesco has brought a new energy to the club, and that is something that could drive them back into the Champions League, a competition they haven't played for in the last 3 years.
Nikolai Müller, one of Hamburg's most important players, scored 7 minutes into the new season, but tore his ligament while celebrating. What does this mean for Müller and the team?
It was rather comical to see what actually happened. Him doing this really weird helicopter celebration, one I've never seen before, and then his players coming around him just as he injured his leg. But Hamburger looking for a replacement. There's a guy from a Turkish club, Galatasaray, that they're looking at to come in and replace him. But they're definitely a man short now with Nikolai Müller injured.
Let's talk about Dortmund's Ousmane Dembele. Despite his absence, the team, you know, managed well, you know, three goals in their first match. What is his status like at the moment?
Well, he still isn't with the club. That's the only thing I can say for sure. There are still talks going on between Dortmund and Barcelona, but Dortmund want to get things done before the transfer deadline ends on August 31st. So their time is really running out to get a deal done. Hans-Joachim Watzke, the CEO for Dortmund, said yesterday that he thinks that there's less than a 50% chance that Dembele will actually get moved. But if he does come back into the club, it's a really awkward situation because this is a guy that clearly wanted to move and maybe not get the move that he wants. So maybe the best thing is to move on from him, especially with, like you said, how well Dortmund played at the weekend.
I'm afraid he might get some boos from the fans, you know, once he returns. Like you said, it's an awkward, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Dortmund fans are relentless, so I would not be surprised if some jeers were in his future.
DW's sports editor Davis Obdop. Now, Morocco wants to join ECOWAS, the West African Economic Bloc, but Nigeria is reluctant to welcome the kingdom, for it might lose its power and influence in the region. So we asked you on Facebook what could happen if Morocco is allowed to join ECOWAS, and we received lots and lots of your comments. Jen, let's get into these comments.
Yeah, we'll start with Baraka Malta. He did not indicate where he's writing us from, but he says, I hope the kingdom of Morocco will join ECOWAS. It will help all the region to develop, being more innovative, being more representative in the international discussions. It will be a big bonus for the industry, trade, culture, and peace in the region.
Mobino Jetta says Morocco has never been part of West Africa. How can it be allowed to join ECOWAS? In the past, Morocco applied to join European Union and its application was rejected. Also, Morocco withdrew from the EU because of Western Sahara, which caused some chaos at the EU. to remind Mobinu Jata Morocco has since reapplied to join the EU.
And why is it being rejected always?
I mean, it wanted to join the wrong bloc, that is the EU. And, you know, for many years, it had, you know, withdrawn its candidacy. I think it was around in the 70s because of the Western Sahara question. So now I think it is seeing the benefits of the African Union and it wants to rejoin.
Thanks for that insight. Ibrahim Shehu says they should be allowed to join, but not be given full privileges as its members.
And Wang Elmoy says ECOWAS is a committee of West African states only. Morocco is in North Africa, which is under the Maghreb. Which does Morocco suddenly want to join? ECOWAS went to refuse to join the EU. I smell a rat. Anyway.
Suleiman Agayadu says, anyway, it's good for Morocco to join ECOWAS because it will help economic, but the problem, it will help economical, but the problem is that Morocco will treat us different no matter how.
Many thanks for your comments and thank you for contributing. And on behalf of the entire production team with me, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
My name is Jane Nyinge. Thanks so much for your time.